Yeah, I think we're ready to get started. So hi again, everyone. I met many of you yesterday, but I'm Brian. I'm a preceptor and I work on CS50's team. And today we're going to be talking about some of CS50's tools specifically for grading and for submission. But before we get started, I just wanted to pause to see if there were any lingering questions from any of the sessions from yesterday. So David introduced the AP curriculum and sort of the problems and the lectures and the topics. And then Kareem later yesterday introduced just a few of CS50's tools. And just in case there were any questions that came up yesterday, if you want to virtually raise your hand or message in the chat, I'm keeping an eye on both if there are any questions about anything from yesterday before we dive into some of the new stuff today. Yeah, if you weren't able to attend the tools session, we have a draft of the video already up on the Notion page where all the registration links are, so you're welcome to go back and watch that session. But you're right that we're also going to reoffer the tools session again next week for a broader audience, so you're welcome to attend that one live if you'd like to as well. David just included a link to the workshop agenda with all of the sessions, with all of the videos that have been posted so far. Also includes a link to all of the slides for all of the sessions so far, including this session today. Where we're going to be talking in more detail about CS50's tools for submitting and grading. Lisa's asking, does Check50 work in the CS50 lab? Yes, Check50 is installed in CS50 Sandbox and the lab and the IDE, so it works in all of them. And as I'll describe a little bit later today in this session, you'll be able to install it on your own computer, even aside from CS50 IDE if you want to. And all right, let's go ahead and get started then. So this session is all about tools that CS50 provides for submitting work and for grading work. You don't need any of these tools necessarily to be able to teach CS50 AP, but we've designed these tools as optional tools that you can use to help make your life easier. We've tried to create tools that automate some of the pain points and the tedious processes of collecting submissions and grading them, and we've tried to make it a little bit easier to provide feedback on students' work as well. So again, the slides that I'm going to be presenting today, those are all linked to in the Notion. And a couple people yesterday mentioned having some trouble with the quality of the slides. We've heard that if you pin my video, so if you click the little three dots in the upper right of my image and you click pin video, that has sometimes been able to make the quality of the slides better. So if you notice that you're not quite able to read everything, that might be able to help you. And yes, the slides are available via that Notion link. But I'm also posting a direct link to the slides in the chat now, if that's something that you'd like to take a look at too. So the tools we're going to be talking about today, specifically for submission and grading, are Check50, Submit50, submit.cs50.io, and Compare50. And I'll go through each of these and sort of explain what they are, what their use case is, why it is that you might use it. And then later this afternoon, in the later session today, Jason Hirschhorn, who led last night's trivia session, if you were able to attend that, he's going to be talking about how he puts some of these tools into practice and how he handles issues of grading and academic honesty with his own students as well. Again, all of these tools serve various different roles. You don't have to use all of these tools. You can sort of pick and choose the tools that best fit your use cases and best fit your need. But I wanted to get a sense, just if I could poll everyone before we get started, for which of these tools you've already used. So I'm going to go ahead and paste a link into the chat. If everyone could just go there and answer for me, which of these tools have you used before? I'd love to get a sense of sort of what our experiences are and whether we've used the tools before. So if you could just click on that link in the chat, and you can choose multiple if you've used multiple of the tools before. Just curious to get a sense for what it is that people have and haven't used. Give people a chance to fill that out. And all right, it looks like a good number of us have used Check50 before. Slightly fewer people Submit50. Some people have used submit.cs50.io, which is the web application that we use in order to facilitate collecting submissions and providing feedback on those submissions. And maybe one or two have used Compare50, which is our plagiarism detection tool. So no worries if you've never used any of the tools or even if you've used all of them. Hopefully today will be a good opportunity to get a sense for what all of these tools are, how you can use them, and why they might be useful or valuable in the classroom. And definitely at any point, if you have questions about the things that we're talking about, either virtually raise your hand or post a message in the chat. I'm keeping an eye on the chat throughout today's session, and there are other staff on hand that are also taking a look at the chat too, if you'd like to ask questions there as well. So, all right, let's go ahead and actually dive right into these tools. And we'll go ahead and start with this website, cs50.readthedocs.io, which is the documentation website for all of these tools. So a couple people were asking about where can I get information about all of the tools that aren't just here in this session. cs50.readthedocs.io will have all of the details plus more for how do you actually go about using all of these various tools. So let's go ahead and start with Check50. Check50 is a command line tool for automatically running tests on students' code, for checking to see whether or not students' code is correct or not. So Kareem demoed this briefly yesterday, but I thought I'd give an overview of how students might use it and how you as a teacher might go about using this tool as well. So if a student is working on one of CS50's problems, for example, they, inside their terminal, inside of CS50 IDE, for example, or perhaps elsewhere, will run a command that looks like this. They'll run check50, followed by a unique identifier, otherwise known as a slug, so I'll call it a slug sometimes. But what this is an identifier that specifies which problem the student would like to run correctness checks for. So here we're specifying CS50 problems, the 2020 version of a problem called cache, which if you've taken the first couple of weeks of CS50, you might be familiar with. So when a student runs check50, followed by the name of the problem they'd like to check, what happens is that their code is uploaded to check50, and then check50 is going to run some automated correctness tests on that code. And we call those automated correctness tests checks. So we have a series of checks that correspond with each of CS50's problems that are automatically run when a student runs check50. And when those checks are done, the results come back and the student sees some smiley faces and some frowny faces indicating which of the checks they've passed and which of the checks they haven't passed. So we use this as a tool that we provide the students access to during the semester as a way for them, while they're working on a problem, to get a sense for whether or not their code is meeting the specification. And we'll sometimes throw in some edge cases or corner cases that students can check to say, my code mostly works, but there were a couple cases that I didn't quite think about. And that'll be revealed to them when they run check 50. So they'll be presented with this information in this format. When they run check 50, they're also presented with a link that will take them to a website. So this website effectively shows students more details about the results of those correctness checks in more detail. And for any of the correctness checks that failed, they'll be given some description of why it is that it failed. So for this check, for example, they'll see on the left-hand side what the expected output was, what it is that Check50 thought their program should produce as output. And on the right-hand side, you see the student's actual output. So they're next to each other, so the student can more easily visually compare between the two to get a sense for what their code should have done and what their code actually did. And this link is shareable, so oftentimes when I'm working with students and they're struggling with a problem, they can just send their check50 link to me, and I can take a look immediately and see, all right, here are the tests that they're passing, and here are the tests that they're not passing. And usually based on that, I can give a general sense for where they might be going wrong or where they might want to try working on fixing something. So that's available to students as they're working on problems. And for you as teachers, if you'd like to check to see whether or not students' code is working, you can do that too. As I mentioned in one of the questions that was asked before, you can run Check50 in CS50 IDE or any of CS50's tools like the lab or in the sandbox, for example. But you can also run Check50 locally on your own computer, that if you don't want to use the IDE or the sandbox or the lab, as long as you have Python 3 installed, Check50 is an open source piece of software written in Python, you can, by running the command pip3 install check50, that will install check50 on your own computer so that you can run the check50 tests on your own machine. And that's true for CS50's other command line tools as well. Submit50, check50, and compare50, the latter of the two we'll talk about a little bit later. All of those are open source tools written in Python that you can install just by using pip3 install on your own computer if you would like to. So questions about anything check50 related so far, if anyone wants to raise their hand. Yeah, Peter, you have a question?
Yeah, so one of the ideas I had is, I think it was yesterday you were mentioning that kids will just use check50. So instead of testing the code themselves, right, and trying to go through ideas themselves, they'll just sort of put it into check50. Is there any way that you can have a check on your end that it'll just spit to an answer back saying two hidden cases aren't working? right? Like you have cases that are public and private, and the private ones, it doesn't say what they are. It just says that they don't work right.
Yes, that is possible. In fact, this is a sort of a recent addition to Check 50 within the last year or so. Check 50 does have support for hidden checks, where effectively students will see whether the check passed or not, but they won't be told the details of why it is the check passed or failed. They won't see like the side-by-side actual expected output. And you can configure the message of what that check is going to display however you want, to be as descriptive, as verbose as you want to be, or you can choose to hide more information. So that's something that we do in CS50 as well. With some of our problems, we will intentionally hide some of the details of the check and just say, this didn't quite work. And so students then have to think about some of those edge cases themselves to go back in and consider how that might work. If you're getting an error installing Check 50, there's sometimes, depending on what version of macOS you're using, there have been some bugs in previous versions of macOS just where there's some incompatibility. Usually upgrading to the latest version of macOS will help to resolve that issue. If even upgrading to the latest version of macOS still isn't resolving the issue, go ahead and send an email to sysadmins@cs50.harvard.edu. So that's this address here that I'm pasting into the chat now. If you email that address, the development team can help to take a look. If you include a screenshot of the error that you're getting, include what version of macOS you're using, the team there can help to make sure that you're able to get Check 50 installed on your own computer. Other questions about Check 50? All right, so I'll show a couple other things about Check 50, just things of note. So here's the type of feedback that a student might get, for example. So the feedback that students get is what their program did and what their program should have done. So here we pass this program an input of 4.2. Check 50 expected the output of the program to be 18, but the student's program outputted 22. And in addition, Check 50 is customizable so that you can provide occasional hints for what a student might want to look at. So it turns out for this particular problem, the cache problem in CS50, we happen to know that this tends to be a check that students fail fairly frequently, and they do so because they've forgotten to round their answer to the nearest whole number, for example. They end up with a decimal that ends up getting truncated, for instance. And this happens so often that we found ourselves answering the same questions again and again and again. And so we actually baked this hint directly into Check 50 itself, that if a student ever gets this error, we can offer the hint of, you know, did you forget to round to the nearest sense? And we found that this has really helped to just make it easier for students to see that and realize, oh, yes, that's absolutely right, and they can go ahead and fix it, as opposed to potentially them getting frustrated for a while, not being sure what exactly is going wrong. And those, again, are configurable, that you can decide if you're writing your own checks, which I'll show you a little bit about in a moment, whether you want to show those hints, how many hints you want to give, so you can decide exactly what that looks like. In terms of where all this information is stored, we use GitHub, which was mentioned yesterday, as the service where all this information is stored. So all of our correctness checks are stored on GitHub. So if you want to go to GitHub, you can actually see all of the checks that we run for each of CS50's problems. And students' code is ultimately hosted on GitHub as well. That's the location that we store students' code when they upload it for use with Check 50. And just to give a better understanding of how exactly that happens, I'll show you that in more detail. But Glenn, before I do, you have a question?
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering, you keep on talking about how these tools are customizable. Are we going to see exactly how to do that at some point?
Yes, absolutely. So in short, we have written Check 50 checks for all of CS50's problems. So certainly you don't need to ever write any of these checks for yourself if you're using CS50's problems. So you can just use them off the shelf. But if you are interested in customizing them to your liking, or if you've written your own problems that you would like for students to be able to run Check 50 on, it is totally possible for you to write your own checks. And I'll show you in a moment what the syntax looks like in order to do so. So absolutely, you can customize them, but you don't have to if you'd just like to use the ones that we have written.
Cool. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. So in short, and this will sort of lend itself right into that customization, when students run Check 50, they're running Check 50 followed by this identifier. In terms of what that identifier means, it's useful to sort of break down. The first part of the identifier, CS50/problems, that is the name of the GitHub repository. And a repository, if you're unfamiliar, you can think of as just like a folder that's going to store a whole bunch of code. This is the name of the GitHub repository where all of the checks are stored. So in this case, all of CS50's own problems are stored in a GitHub repository inside of an account called CS50 inside of a repository called problems. So CS50/problems is going to be the starting portion of any of the Check50 submission slugs or unique identifiers that students use in order to run Check50. If you create your own checks in your own repository, like if I created checks in BrianU28 is my GitHub username, if I created them in BrianU28/problems, then students would run Check50 BrianU28/problems in order to run checks that I have written myself. So you don't need to get like any special approval or upload any of your code to us to be able to run those checks. You just need to put your checks on GitHub, and then students are going to be able to run them. So that's the GitHub repository, the first part of the Check50 submission slug. The next part, 2020/X, is the name of a branch on that repository. So again, if unfamiliar with GitHub, a repository or a folder on GitHub can effectively be divided into different branches that can have different versions of that repository. And we use that for different years and different semesters that we offer the course. So because our problems evolve a little bit from year to year, we create a separate branch for every year. That way, if you want to check the 2019 version of the problem, you can. If you want to check the 2020 version of the problem, you can, just by specifying a different branch. And then the final part of that submission slug, cache, that is represents the name of a folder on that branch, where that folder contains all of the correctness checks. And so it just so happens that if you go to our repository, which is github.com/cs50/problems, which I've linked to in the chat if you'd like to take a look at that, you'll find in that repository a folder called cache, inside of which are all of the checks for that problem. So if you want to take a look at that, you can. No need to worry about understanding all of that if you just want to use Check50. We provide you with just these submission slugs that students generally just copy-paste. But if you are interested in getting a little more technical and writing your own checks, then it can be helpful to understand that structure for how each identifier works. And Margaret Tanzosch, one of the CS50 AP teachers who you were introduced to yesterday, and she'll be talking again tomorrow, she's done this with her own class, where she's written some problems and written some Check50 checks, and she uses sort of custom Check50 submission slugs with her students. And I'm sure she'd be happy to talk to you all about that a little bit in more detail tomorrow. But I'm also happy to answer questions about that now. Any questions then before I move on? And we'll talk a little more specifically about how it is that you could write these for yourself if you want to. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about how you could write CS50 checks. You never have to do this, but if you've created your own problem and you'd like to use Check50 with it, you can do this. And in short, you'll need two files inside of the folder for your checks that you upload to GitHub. The first file is called .cs50.yaml. This is a configuration file that basically specifies which files do you need to collect if you are going to ask students to be submitting their work. And so here we're effectively specifying that for Check50 to run, here are the files. We're going to, by default, exclude star. So by default, don't include any of the files. But then on the next line, we've said require cache.c to mean cache.c is a required file that students must have in order to run Check50. So in effect, what this means is that if a student has like 10 files in their folder right now and they run Check50, we're going to ignore the other 9, but we're only going to upload cache.c. So it's up to you to decide which files you actually want to collect, but generally speaking, for Check50's purposes, we'll collect like .c files, like cache.c, but if they have text files where they've just written notes to themselves, for example, or if they've included a PDF in their folder where they've done some research on something, we don't want to include those files when things are submitted, so you can just specify which files you want to collect. Amber, yes, all of the recordings for these sessions are going to be posted online on the Notion page. So shortly after this session is over, you can go back and rewatch this. In addition, all of this information you can also find on cs50.readthedocs.io, the website that was linked to in the chat a little bit earlier. And if you go to the GitHub repository for CS50's problems, you can see the example checks for our own problems if you'd like to model your own checks on that. And I think a lot of teachers end up doing that when they write their own checks. They sort of copy-paste what we've started with, and then they modify it to work for their particular problem. So that's absolutely something that you're encouraged to do just to make the process a little bit easier. So that's the first file. The first file just specifies which files do we want to collect from the students in order to run those correctness checks. And then the second file is called init.py, and this includes in a Python file, so you'll need to know a little bit of Python syntax. You write in Python what it is that each of the checks is going to do. So in effect, each correctness check is one Python function. So inside of this file, you just include one Python function for each thing that you would like to check. So this one, for example, every function begins with what's known as a Python decorator, just a line that says, this is a CS50 check. Then inside of the function on this first line is the description of the check. It's what's going to show up to the student next to the smiley face or the frowny face so that they know whether their check passed or failed. And so here we generally describe this as, you know, an input of 0.15 yielded an output of 2. So just some description of what it is that we are actually checking. And here is one of those places that if you don't want to be as explicit about what it is that you're checking, if you want to hide some information, you could change that description to something less descriptive if you didn't want to provide all of that information. But that line of text is what students will see when they run check 50 and when they see all of their check results. And then down below, you'll see that we've effectively written some built-in functions just to make it easy to do input and output tests, where here we're saying, go ahead and run the cache program, and then provide as input, standard in, the value 0.15, and expect as output the number 2, and then at the end we say expect an exit code of 0, meaning expect the program to just finish successfully. And so that effectively chains together what it is this check is doing. Run this program, pass in something as input, expect something as output, and then expect the program to exit without causing any error. And many of our checks follow this format of like provide something as input and expect something else as the output of that check. But because this is Python, you can actually customize this all you want. Anything that a Python program could check for, your check 50 check could also check for. It just so happens the most common thing is when you provide this input, expect an output. But if you want to check individual Python functions, or you want to run like a Python loop to be able to check a whole bunch of things in one check, that's something that you can do as well. So definitely a lot of flexibility. Just anything you can write Python code for, you could use as a check 50 check. Can you add multiple messages on each function? Each function is only associated with a single description, and that's the part that's enclosed in those three quotation marks, which is known as a Python doc string. But that doc string can be arbitrarily long. So if you want to add more information to that message, you can make that message as long as you want. But generally, we suggest splitting up different tests into different functions. That way, students can see that one thing passed, but some other thing didn't pass, for example. So usually, we tend to suggest that works a little bit better, but it's entirely up to you for what checks, for how you want to go about writing your own checks. Other questions about anything there? All right, let's go ahead and move on. So a couple of things just to note about writing checks. One thing that we allow are what are known as check dependencies. So you can have one check that depends upon the passage of another check. For example, usually with our checks, we'll first check to make sure that the student's code compiles, like doesn't have any syntax errors, for example. And we'll first do that check. And if that check fails, then we're not going to bother running the other checks. They'll sort of see a neutral face just to say that we didn't bother running any of the other checks because unless the program compiles, there's no real point in going through and doing all of those other checks. In addition to that, you can also provide custom help messages, which I described a little bit earlier, where you saw, like, did you remember to round the number to the nearest, some number of cents, for nearest cent, for example. You can provide those messages. And then finally, because these are all written in Python, you can add Python packages to your checks as well. So if you want to install some third-party library, if you want to do, like, check their web page and do web scraping on their page to make sure that the web page students create follows certain guidelines, you can do that, but you can use any Python package that you'd like inside of those checks to be able to check for whatever you want. Again, all of those things are just available to you. Many teachers teach CS50 AP never having to write any of their own checks at all if they just use CS50's problems. But if you want to, know that these tools are available to you. And for more details, this is the website to go to, cs50.readthedocs.io, where you can find more information about Check 50. The specific link for writing Check 50 checks specifically is... I'll go ahead and paste that into the chat now as well. It's that URL there. With information about how to write checks. And of course, you can reference the checks that we have written already for CS50's problems, which are all public, if you'd like to model your own correctness checks on that. So I'll pause here for any questions about Check 50. Oh, someone asks, how do you do hidden checks? In short, it's going to be another decorator. So if you look back at here's what the original check looked like, where you have check50.check as the decorator on that very first line. Underneath that, if you wanted a hidden check, you would just say check50.hidden to be able to add a hidden check. But all of that information is available online in Check50's documentation, if you want to take a look at that.
Brian, I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
You mentioned something and I missed it about if a student does a check on their work and you want to check in on their Check 50 result, there's a link or something that's generated. Is that my understanding that correctly?
Yes. So when a student runs Check 50, a link is generated for them, which it links to a web page that has all their Check 50 results. That link is shareable. So if they send that link to you, you'll be able to see that.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Matthew.
Brian, I remember working on spell check a couple of years ago. I'm getting back into this, and I couldn't remember if it was in Check 50 or another tool where I could go in and look at what was stored in memory. Is that in Check 50 or is that another tool?
Going in and looking at what's stored in memory, you might be thinking of the debugger, debug 50,
okay,
which lets you step through your code and you can look at the values of memory addresses and values of variables.
Okay.
And if you missed that, Kareem did a demo of that in yesterday afternoon session, and the recording of that is on the Notion page already if you want to take a look at that.
Thank you, sorry.
Yeah, of course, no problem. Can Check 50 run in Java? Check 50 in theory can support any language so long as you install it in advance. Java is installed on the server where we run Check 50 checks, so you should be able to run Java programs and pass input and output to that as well. We have certain functions that are specialized to make it just to simplify the process of doing checks in languages like C and Python, which CS50's problems are written in, but totally possible to use Check 50 for other languages too. How do you handle how the description works in Python? The description, I'll go ahead and show it again here. That's just in what's enclosed in the three quotation marks immediately beneath the name of the function. So any text you include in between those three quotation marks that you're looking at here, that is what the student will see as the description for the check. And I can give you an example of that if we go to the complete file, if you're looking for what this all looks like. That is the complete file for this cache check that's running for this program called cache, which is in one of the early problem sets in CS50, so you can see exactly what that input-output process looks like. How do you handle multiple inputs, Steve is asking? You can chain these things together. So I've said .standardin once and then .standardout to say expect this input and then expect that output. You can do multiple inputs and outputs in a single line where you say pass this as input, expect this as output, then provide another input and expect something else as output. So if you have an interactive program where it's input, output, input, output, you can do it that way too, just to expect multiple inputs and outputs together. Yeah, Steve, another question?
Yeah, well, just along those lines. So let's say that I'm passing in A and B, for instance. So uh-huh. I have two inputs that are going to go in. So you know, you're calculating addition of two inputs. How would I format the check to take those two pieces that go into one, into one function that then yield a single output?
Oh, so if you're providing like A space B and you're typing that into the terminal, do I understand that right?
Yeah, something like that. Yes.
Yeah, sure. So I can show you what that might look like. So you would write like check50.run. I'll make this a little bigger so it's a little easier to see. So check50.run and then like .cache if that were the name of the program. And then I'd say input A space B for whatever A and B are. And you can provide whatever string you want as the input to the program. So if it is one thing followed by another thing, you can do that too. All right. If there seems to be anything missing from the documentation, go ahead and if you email sysadmins@cs50.harvard.edu, we can make sure to clarify anything that you don't seem to be able to find. And I'm also happy to answer questions about that soon, too. All right, in that case, let's talk about Submit50. Submit50 is a command line tool for students to submit their own work. So we know that some of you, your schools require you to use a particular LMS where students need to upload their work to a particular place. But if you have the flexibility to let students upload their work separately, Submit50 we've designed to be a convenient tool to make it easy for students to submit work and then for that work to be collected and graded and for feedback to be provided on that as well. So in terms of how this works, very, very similar to Check50. They're in fact using a lot of the same underlying tools. So what a student will write is they will write Submit50, followed again by that same exact format for a unique identifier for the problem. So something like cs50/problems/2020/x/cache. When they do so, students are going to be prompted for their GitHub username and password. Again, we use GitHub as the storage mechanism for all of students' work. So they type in their GitHub username, something like student50. They type in their password. And then they're told which files are going to be submitted. So they'll see, okay, cache.c, that is a file that is going to be submitted. They can verify that's actually the file that they want to submit. Students are then asked to agree to the course's policy on academic honesty. We find that this just helps students to think a little bit about making sure that the code they are submitting is actually their own. And Jason, a little bit later today, will be talking in more detail about how he deals with issues of academic honesty in his own classroom. So students type Y or yes in response to that question to say, yes, I acknowledge the policy on academic honesty. The student's code is uploaded, and then that code has been uploaded to GitHub. And submit.cs50.io is the website that you can use in order to actually view the results of any of those submissions. And I'll talk about submit.cs50.io next, because these tools are very much linked and they're designed to work well together, even though they don't have to be used together. So Submit50, very similar to Check50 in terms of usage, just Submit50 followed by the slug, and that will submit it, whether from CS50 IDE or lab or sandbox, or even, again, using your own computer, you can pip install Submit50 to be able to submit work from any computer if you would like to as well. In terms of where this code actually goes, the code ultimately goes to GitHub as our storage mechanism. So every student gets a repository specific to them. So it's in a GitHub organization called me50/whatever the student's username is. So you as the teacher can go to github.com/me50/your student's username, and you will see all of the work that a student has submitted using Submit50. And what we do on that GitHub repository is, again, repositories can be divided into branches that just separate out different parts of that repository. We create one branch per problem. So for every problem that a student submits, we'll create a branch for them for that particular problem so that you can switch between the different branches of the repository to see all of the different work that the student has submitted. Yes, Fedor, you have a question?
Yeah, I just would like to double check. So a student has to have a GitHub account, right?
Yes, that for Submit50 to work, yes, students will need a GitHub account in order to be able to upload their work to Submit50.
They will have to have their personal account, so I cannot provide them with my account or something like this, yeah? They have to have personal account.
Generally, yeah, it's best if students are using their own account. Otherwise, if there was one central account for the course, any student could see all of the other students' work that's being submitted, for example. Okay. So yes, best if each student has their own GitHub account to be able to use the tools.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, of course. Other questions about Submit50? In a moment, I'll show you submit.cs50.io, which is the linked account to that. Do we have to worry about privacy with the GitHub account? So the student's GitHub repository is a private repository. So nobody else other than CS50 is We have a sort of a CS50 bot that has access to the account. But not, it's not public to anyone on the internet to be able to see students' work. So only the student will be able to see their own Me50 repository. And you, the teacher, can get access to the Me50 repository as well. So the work is indeed private. Students don't have to provide their name to make an account. And in fact, that's something that we tell students for privacy sake as well. In CS50 at the college too, is that if they prefer not to use their full name, they're welcome to use a pseudonym or a nickname or just any GitHub username. So long as you, the teacher, know what the username corresponds to, they never need to tell GitHub what their name is. They can just use any username they would like to. Yes, if students log in to their GitHub account, they will see their Me50 repository, which is just like a unique repository created for every student designed to hold all of their submissions.
Do we have to worry about, in addition to privacy, do we have to do anything with the kids sharing it with each other? I mean, do the repositories stay hidden or can they make them public at all?
The repositories are hidden. Now, the IDE is shareable. So you should be aware that like students, if they really wanted to, could theoretically share an IDE with another student. And that's a useful feature in terms of collaboration, but something to be mindful of. And Jason this afternoon will talk a little more about how he deals with these sorts of things and academic honesty and offer an opportunity to discuss these sorts of things as well. All right, so closely tied to Submit50 is a web application called submit.cs50.io. This is a web application for you as a teacher to view student submissions and their scores. So the idea is that when a student runs Submit50, because they're running it using the same identifier they use to run Check50, we, on CS50 side, will automatically run Check50 on any work the student submits, and we'll also, for good measure, run Style50 to check student style as well. So anytime students submit their work, we're automatically going to run all of the correctness tests and automatically run all of the style tests so that you can just see the results of those tests immediately, no effort needed on your end, and you can then download that information, and if you want to then import it into your own gradebook using whatever gradebook tool that you happen to use, we make it easy to download that information as a spreadsheet file. Is there a way to submit from the IDE, lab, or sandbox? Yes, Submit50 is installed on CS50 IDE and CS50 lab and CS50 sandbox by default, and you can also install it on your own computer outside of any of those tools as well. How do students make a Me50 account for themselves? When a student signs in to submit.cs50.io, a Me50 account is automatically created for them. So that'll be an effective first step that students will need to do. Once they've created a GitHub account, they go to submit.cs50.io, they sign in with their GitHub username, and we will automatically create a Me50 repository to host all of their code. And you can test this out for yourself if you want. If you have a GitHub account and you go to submit.cs50.io, you will automatically, once you sign in, a Me50/your username repository will be created for you, and you can visit that repository and see what it's like. How are the students organized into your course? That is what submit.cs50.io is for. That is the website that's designed to organize your course, to get students into that course, and to give you access to all of your student submissions and scores. So I will show you how that works in just a moment. So just to get a sense for how all these pieces link together, so what you imagine the student workflow looking like is that a student on their computer runs Submit50. So a student runs Submit50 on their computer, and when a student runs Submit50 on their computer, what happens is that we take their submission and we upload that submission to GitHub, to a separate repository created for each student. So each student has a Me50/their username repository where we're hosting their code. And as soon as that happens, as soon as GitHub receives a new submission from a student, GitHub will notify us. GitHub notifies submit.cs50.io that there is a new submission, and we will then pull that student submission from GitHub, downloading it onto our servers, and we'll automatically run correctness checks like Check50 and Style50 on that student's code that we then store for you as the teacher to then be able to see. So you can log into submit.cs50.io and see the results of the correctness checks for all of the work that students have done. So how do you actually go about doing this? If you go to submit.cs50.io/courses/new, you can create a new course. So that's the URL you go to create a new course. What that'll look like is a web page like this where you can type in the name of a course, like my CS50 AP course. I know that many teachers who are teaching like multiple different classes will usually version their course name, say something like CS50 AP 2020 period 4 or something like that, just so you can create one separate course for each of your various different groupings of students. That just tends to make things a little bit easier to keep everything organized. Once you create the course, a couple of things that will be available to you. One right here in this blue box is the invitation link. This is how you get students into the course. You give this URL to your students. And when students click on that link, they'll click a button to say, yes, I'm in this course. And when that happens, they will be added to your submit.cs50.io course, which means a couple of things. It means one, your GitHub account will automatically get access to the students' Me50 repository. So you, the teacher, will automatically be able to see all of the students' submitted work across all of the problems that they have submitted. You'll also get access to the results of their correctness checks and their style checks in the submit.cs50.io interface. So you see a submissions button up at the top of this webpage here. When you click on that button, you'll see all of the problems that have been submitted, all of the students that have submitted that problem, as well as their correctness and style scores. And I'll show you that in a moment as well. So that's the invitation link that you can use in order to invite other students to the course. Yesterday, someone was asking about what do I do if I have a TA in my class and I want to give that TA access to the course as well. Further down on this website, you can generate other invitation links that are staff-specific invitation links. And if you click on that staff invitation, if you send that staff invitation link to a staff member, that staff member can join the course as well as a staff member, and they will then also have access to all of the submissions and to all of the GitHub accounts as well. So if you have a TA for the class, you can give them access to submissions too. Is there a way to archive past classes on submit.cs50.io? Right now, there is not. You can just see all of the classes on the main homepage of submit.cs50.io. But if you ever have feature requests for submit.cs50.io or for any of the tools, if you email sysadmins@cs50.harvard.edu, the team that develops this tool will keep an eye on that, and we can often work to add new features to the tools, and we're always working to try and make them better for particular use cases. And that's the same email address you should send if you're getting any errors when you're trying to create a course, which I noticed that I'm getting in the chat now as well. I'll paste it again here. It's sysadmins@cs50.harvard.edu as the address to reach out to if you're running into any technical trouble, and the team there can hopefully help you out. All right, in addition to that, down below is a section called slugs. Here is where you include all of the unique identifiers you want to use for the course. And so here you see I've included CS50 problems 2020/AP, meaning anytime a student submits to a submission slug that begins with CS50 problems 2020/AP, that will show up in my submit.cs50.io interface. So sometimes you'll run into students that have maybe submitted to a different CS50 course, like one of our online courses on edX. So if you want to exclude those submissions, you basically only include the submission slugs you actually care about collecting, and those are the ones that you're going to see. And if you've created your own checks in your own repository, you can click that green plus button to be able to create multiple different slugs that you're keeping track of as well. Can a student submit once or multiple times for one project? Students can submit multiple times. When a student submits again, we will automatically run those correctness checks, and you'll be able to see the results. As a teacher, will you see a list of all your students in the Me50 area? Yeah, so a couple ways you can see a list of all your students. One is if you go to github.com/Me50, you'll be able to see all of the GitHub Me50 repositories you have access to, which will be yourself and all of your students as well. And additionally, up at the top of this window that you can see, there's a button called Students. And if you click on that Students button, you'll see a list of all the students in that particular course. So if you have different submit.cs50.io courses for different different periods or different semesters, you can see just the students that are in one particular class period. Other questions? If you have a student whose GitHub username is something, can you see their actual name in submit.cs50.io? No, and that's one of the privacy things of GitHub, is that students are not required to provide their name to GitHub for privacy reasons, such that if a student doesn't want to tell GitHub what their name is, they can just identify themselves by some username. And so submit.cs50.io is just pulling that data from GitHub, so it doesn't have access to a student's actual name. For privacy reasons, it only has access to the student's GitHub username. Is the submission rejected if the code is not correct? The submission is accepted no matter what the code contains. Students could theoretically submit a totally empty file and that would be collected, but it wouldn't pass the correctness checks that are run on the student's code. And I will show you in a moment what that view looks like to see what the results of the correctness checks appear to be. How do students access course content? So that's going to vary. So a couple of options for course content, and David discussed this in a little bit more detail in yesterday's session as well, when he was talking about the curricular resources. But many students who use, or many teachers who use their own platform like Google Classroom or some other LMS, will include in those platforms links to like CS50 problem set specifications, for example, or other CS50 lectures or other resources. So that's definitely one option. If you want to create your own website too, though, our CS50 AP website is hosted on GitHub. So if you would like to, you can fork the CS50 AP website to create a new version of the website for yourself, where you can modify and edit that website to include whatever content and deadlines and additional resources that you want to as well. How does it work when students submit after the deadline? So we associate with every submission the timestamp of that submission. So when you download students' code, you will download it and you'll get a column in the resulting spreadsheet that you'll get that'll have like one column for their username, one column for how many checks they passed, one column for their style score. There'll be another column for the submission deadline as well. So you can sort of sort that spreadsheet by submission deadline, and immediately any of the submissions that are late are going to pop to the top. So you can organize that spreadsheet however you like. And we do that because we know that different teachers use different learning management systems. So we don't want to lock you into any one system. We let you download all the data as a spreadsheet so that you can then import that data or use that data in any system that you would like. And yeah, if you're running into any technical issues creating a course, email sysadmins@cs50.harvard.edu, and the team there can definitely help out. All right, so a couple other things just to cover. This is what student submissions will look like when a student submits and you go to the submissions page. You'll see up at the top a submission slug, like the one you see here. Next to that, how many students have submitted a particular problem. And then beneath that, you'll see the student's username, and you'll see what time they submitted. So in this case, the student submitted 5 minutes ago, and here's the timestamp. And you'll also see their check 50 and their style 50 score. So next to check 50, it says 10 out of 11. So the student has passed 10 of the correctness checks out of the total of 11. If you click on that check 50 link, you'll be taken to the check 50 website, that website that shows you the results of all of the correctness checks the same way that a student might see it. So you get to see their score right away there. The style score is rated on a 0 to 1 scale, basically what percentage of the lines were correctly styled. So 1.00 means all of the lines were correctly styled, nothing style 50 would have changed. But again, you can click on that style 50 link to see what the student's style was like and what things that you might be able to change as well. Is style 50 included in the grading points? So there are two separate scores. There's a check 50 score that is how many checks did the students pass. There's a style 50 score for how well styled is the student's code. And it's up to you what you want to do with those scores when you download the results. So there's a button in the upper right, not shown here, where you can download the results of all of these checks. And you can decide to only care about the correctness check if that's the only thing that matters to you. You can only consider the style consider both the correctness and the style check if you would like to in combination. But that decision is entirely up to you. We provide you with the data so that you can do with those scores whatever you would like with that information. You'll also notice on the right-hand side a button that says zero comments. So because we use GitHub as the infrastructure for submission, GitHub has built-in commenting features, built-in email notifications when someone leaves a comment on your code. So this makes it very easy for you to be able to provide feedback on your students' work and for students to be notified of those changes and for them to be able to have a back-and-forth conversation with you in GitHub to be able to try and talk about students' code and talk about students' work. So when you click on that comments link inside of this page here, you'll be taken to a comments page, something that looks a little something like this. This is just GitHub's interface for commenting on code. But if you hover over any one of those lines, if I hover over a line that I want to make a comment on, you'll see a little plus icon appear. When I click there, you'll be a text field will open up where you can write a comment. So if you'd like to provide feedback to your students' work, GitHub makes it pretty easy for you to be able to provide inline comments on any line of code that you would like to make comments on. And students then get notified of that. You can start a threaded discussion where the student can reply to you if they have a follow-up question about the comment that you left, and you can reply back to them as well. And all of that is inline so that it's very clear what line of code you happen to be referencing. All right, so that then is providing feedback on students' code using Submit50 and submit.cs50.io. And again, sysadmins is available for any technical assistance or support you might need on that. Any questions now about check50, submit50, or submit.cs50.io that we've talked about so far? Where are students notified of any comments? If students go into submit.cs50.io, they'll see their number of comments and they can click on that link to be able to see it as well. But also, if they've turned GitHub notifications on, students will receive notifications when you leave a comment on their GitHub submission. How does Check50 handle whitespace characters? If students have an extra new line or whitespace isn't marked as wrong, that's up to the check writer. We have generally made our checks fairly lenient, such that if there's an extra whitespace or if there's space at the beginning, then we might still consider the check to pass. But you, because it's arbitrary Python code, you can decide what it is that you're going to count as correct or not correct. There are certain problems, for example, like Mario's Pyramid in CS50, where we do care exactly what the amount of white space is, and if you have the wrong amount of white space, it's wrong. So in those cases, we might be stricter about white space. And so the flexibility of Python means that you can write checks to be as stringent or as lenient as you would like. You can even, if you're familiar with regular expressions, which are special syntaxes for matching on particular patterns, Check50 has support for regular expressions as well, if you'd like to include a regular expression to say, this is the type of phrase that I would like to match. Removing students from a course, I'm not sure offhand, you might want to email sysadmins again about that particular issue. That may be something we need to help with, just because there are some permission settings that have to be changed just to make sure that that process is handled cleanly. Other questions then about Check50, Submit50, or submit.cs50.io? Again, all of these tools are just options that are available for usage. You can use one or two or all three of those of the tools, or none at all, entirely up to what fits best with your classroom and the types of work that you're doing. And writing checks is, of course, an option for you as well, if you would like to do that too. All right, with that, let's go ahead and move into the final tool that I was going to talk about today. And this is specifically with regards to academic honesty. And this tool is called Compare50. And Compare50 is a command line tool for detecting code similarity. So checking for potential plagiarism is something that we at the college do after every problem set. And it's something that we want to make available to you as well if you would like to check students work for potential copying from other students or copying from sources online as well. So Compare50 is an open source Python tool that you can install and just use if you would like to check students' code for similarity. And effectively what Compare50 does is you give it all of your student submissions. Compare50 will take every pair of submissions and cross-check each pair against each other, and it will look for any pairs of submissions that look suspiciously similar. And it'll try and find the suspiciously similar pairs of students' code and bring those to your attention so that you can then go through a more manual process of looking at those submissions and looking at what it is that was similar about it. So in terms of how you go about using Compare50, you can install it, again, using Python. If you have Python 3 installed on your computer, you can run pip3 install Compare50. That will install Compare50 onto your computer. And effectively, what we suggest doing is create one folder for each of your students inside of that folder, you can put any of the students' files. So if students have a project that spans multiple files, you can include all of those files inside of that folder. And then what you'll do on the command line, and you can see a demo right here, is I will run compare 50 and then just star for like compare all the files in the current folder. And compare 50 will automatically go through this automatic comparison process, comparing all of the pairs of submission for similarity, and then outputting the results in a web-based format that I can navigate by going through some pages. So it generates a web page on my computer. And when I open up that web page, this is what I see. So on the left-hand side, you see all of the pairs of submissions that were deemed to be similar to each other. And you can choose how many submissions you want. Here I said, just give me like the top 50 matches, for example. And they're associated with a score, a 0 to 10 score for how similar they are to each other, where 10 out of 10 means like basically identical, very high, high level match. And as the numbers go down, they're still very similar, but maybe less similar. Then on the right-hand side of the screen, what you're looking at is a cluster map. So sometimes when students are potentially copying code from each other, it's not just one student copying code from another student. It might be a group of three or four students that are all sharing code with each other, and you end up with like a little cluster of four students where the code is very similar to each other. So the right-hand side is showing you what clusters of code appear to be similar to each other. And along the bottom there on the right-hand side, you should be able to see a little slider. That slider is a threshold bar where you can say, how similar of a match do I actually care about seeing? Right now, we've set the threshold bar to 1, so we're getting a whole lot of matches that are all very similar to each other. Probably not too useful. But watch what happens as I drag the slider to the right, sort of increase the threshold for how similar I want to consider. When I do that, what you'll notice is that the submission list sort of narrows it down a little bit. And what you're left with on the right-hand side is you're left with fewer clusters. I see one cluster of three students where their code all appears very similar to each other, and then a pair of just two students where their code seems to be fairly similar to each other too. And then on the left-hand side, you'll see just that list of submissions, just those pairs of students where their code does happen to be similar to each other. And the colors in the graph of these connected students, those are the same colors in terms of the color code that's used on the right. So you can immediately identify which are the students that are involved in this group of three students that appear to have similar code to each other, and which students are just this pair of two students that appear to have similar code to each other too. When you click on any of those individual pairs of submissions, you're taken to a side-by-side web page where you can see one student's code on the left and the other student's code on the right. So you can just compare back to back. And we offer a few different modes for comparison. So right now we're in what's known as text comparison mode. Effectively, we're just comparing all of the text of what students wrote to see, you know, if the same sequence of characters really appears in both submissions. Especially as you're noticing here, there are like comments that are identical using the exact same words, using the exact same spacing. Those are the types of things that we highlight and draw to your attention just so you can notice that. But Compare50 is more intelligent than that too. That oftentimes we notice that, at the college at least, one of the common ways that students might try to copy other students' work is by copying a file and then removing the comments and then changing all the variable names, for example. So now the characters don't quite match up. There's not a whole lot of text in common because all the variable names are different, but structurally the program is identical. And so on the left-hand side, you can see there are a couple of different comparison methods that you can use. We call these different passes that you can take over students' work. So right now we're in text comparison mode, but you can switch into structure comparison mode, which we're in now. And now you're noticing that even though the text of the student submission is slightly different, the structure of these two programs is entirely the same. If you ignore all of the comments, you ignore what specific names they're using for variables, the structure of the program, where they're using a loop, what values they're using, where they're using conditions, is it a less than or a greater than condition? These are all about the structure of the code rather than the specific text of the code. The structure comparison will allow you to see what the similarities are there too. So you can toggle back and forth between these various different comparison modes to get a better sense for where student code might be similar. So the idea here is that Compare50 is not going to tell you exactly which instances of plagiarism there were. It's just going to be an assisting tool for you to highlight areas where Compare50 is suspicious that there is a lot of similarity, but it's up to your own judgment then to go in, look at these submissions, and make that decision and determination for yourself. Which comparison is used for the scores in the longer list, structure or text or both? I believe the overall comparison is based on the structural comparison of the code. That's sort of the default one that we're using. But I will note that Compare50, because it's open source, is very customizable and extendable. So you can customize it to decide how it is that you want to score it. And if there are other passes that you want to add, in addition to just the passes that we are currently doing, you're welcome to add that to Compare50 itself. That you can extend it with your own passes of comparison if you would like to. Maybe if something's more appropriate for a particular problem that you're writing. Usually we find that the passes that are just built into Compare50 are generally good enough. You don't have to write any of your own code if you don't want to. But if you would like to extend it, Compare50 is totally open source and it's easily extendable to add additional passes if you would like to. So that's an option you have available to you too. Other features that Compare50 has are distribution code. So if you are providing distribution code to students, some starting point from which they're adding code, if you just do a naive comparison of all of these pieces of code, it's going to claim that they're all very similar because all of them match on the distribution code because the distribution code is the same across all of the different students. So Compare50 lets you specify like a blank distribution code file where you can say, this is what the distribution code was, so don't bother counting those sorts of matches as potentially suspicious. It's only going to consider matches on the stuff that isn't distribution code. So if you're providing some sort of starting code for your students to work on, you can use that distribution code as a place to begin so that Compare50 doesn't accidentally think that might be an instance of plagiarism. And the other thing worth noting is that we also have support for archived submissions, meaning if you're offering the same AP course multiple semesters after another, and you're maybe using the same problems year after year, you can archive those older submissions and include that archive as something that you check when you're running Compare50. And what that means is that your current students will be compared not only against each other, but also against anyone in the archive, such that if a student copied their code from someone who took your class 2 years ago, that result will also appear in your results too. So anytime you save the results of submissions, you can include those archived submissions when you run Compare50 as well. The archived students won't be compared against one another because presumably they've already taken the course, but your current students will be compared against any of the students that happen to be in the archive. So questions then about Compare50, how that works or how do you use it? How do you compare against CS50 problem set solutions that are published to the web? Generally, the way we do that is that we look for solutions on the web. You look for like CS50 Mario, for example. And if you find a solution, you can download it and use that as an archived submission. So using the archived submission feature I was just talking about, you can use any other solutions you find as archived submissions, which means all of your current students will be compared against that archived solution from the past. So if anyone is copying from a problem set solution that happens to be posted on the internet, you'll be able to know about that. And again, Compare50, if you want to see more, all of that is open source and made available on GitHub if you're curious about how that comparison process is actually happening. And I've included the link to GitHub in the chat if you'd like to take a look at that too. Other things about Compare50 then, about how to use it or about any of the particular ways in which it works? The chat is generally not, in fact, the chat is not going to be on the YouTube version of the of this session, but I know that yesterday at least there was a Google Doc that was circulating where people were contributing their own notes on things that they had found from the chat or links that were pasted in the chat. So if anyone is still using that Google Doc and wants to paste a link to that in the chat, that might be helpful as well.
Brian, I can repost it. I posted it at the beginning of this.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks, Megan. Yeah, so hopefully any of the links that the relevant links from the chat are included in that document as well. And certainly if there's anything that was in the chat that you weren't sure about and you wanted to go back to, definitely at any point you can ask any of us during the session or during other workshop sessions or after the workshop sessions as well. And we can definitely help you with that too. The Compare50 documentation on Read the Docs is not quite complete yet, but you can see sample usage and usage instructions. That's the link for that, the Read the Docs link for Compare50. We're hoping to make that those explanations a little bit more detailed, just to make it easier, but that is where you can find that information right now, at least. Other questions then about Compare50, or really, I guess, any then of CS50's tools, Check50, Submit50, submit.cs50.io, or Compare50, which are the ones that we talked about today. But I'm also happy to answer questions about any of the tools that Kareem showed yesterday, for example, or anything else. Is the Compare50 distribution also include pseudocode, such as comments? Distribution code comments. Yeah, so anything that is in your distribution code file, like a comment, for example, that is not something that Compare50 will consider to be a match when it's trying to check multiple different students' code for potential matches. So that's what the distribution code feature of Compare50 can be used for. All right, in that case, we will wrap up here. But the next session will start at 3 p.m. Eastern with Jason. And so enjoy your afternoon or whatever time of day it is for you. And we'll see you later in the workshop.